I'm bays. We're holding 8 lines from the bottom. We started a discussion yesterday. The Mishnah had talked about between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon about at what point do we say that the ownership of the knas for an anusa or mufuta, and maybe also the nezek and boshes and whatnot, at what point do we say that it's transferred instead of going to the girl's father, which in that case then it would become part of the estate and then it would go to his sons if they inherit him, versus when do we say that it goes to her directly? So we said the Chachamim had said the key thing is when they actually went to court. If after they went to court to Beis Din with the case, at that point the father died, then we say once it was already being decided in Beis Din that it has to be paid, then already it's considered as if the father has it, and therefore it becomes part of his estate and it ends up going to his sons. As opposed to Reb Shimon had said, the key thing is whether the money had actually been collected yet. Mm-hmm. According to him, even if Beis Din had paskined that the onus or the mefata owes the money, and then the father died, then at that point it goes to her. And we had a whole discussion about what Reb Shimon holds exactly about this business of knas. Do we ever say that the knas gets converted into mama, and do we ever say, according to Reb Shimon, that after Beis Din paskins that he owes the money? Do we say there comes at that point it's not really a knas anymore? For example, at that point, if he were to deny it, if afterwards Beis Din had passed him that he owes the money and they had left Beis Din, if afterwards he goes and admits, you know what, I actually did do it, that wouldn't make him potter from the knas, unlike previously where Modi was knas potter. So we went into a whole discussion about what Reb Shimon holds about that. We said that Reb Shimon would hold that it's still considered, that according to Rabba, we said in the end that it's sort of a hybrid. We said that Reb Shimon would say, first of all, that as far as the dinim of Asham Gzelus, as far as the dinim that if you swear falsely on a monetary claim and then you do tshuva and admit to it, that you have to pay the keren v'chomesh and bring a carbon asham. All of that only applies to something that started out as mammon. It doesn't apply to something that started out as knas, like in this case over here. Second of all, we said with the so far we had in the Gemara that even with, what about the other part of it? Does it become part of the estate and be inherited by the sons or not? That Reb Shimon would say it depends. There's a difference between the knas of onus and mefata versus every other kind of knas. Every other kind of knas, he would say that I admit, I agree with the Chachamim, once Beis Din has paskin that he owes it, then it becomes mammon. Onus and mefata are a special case because the Torah says v'nosan on it. So that's where we were up to. Right? So we're 8 lines from the bottom of Mabez and Mabez. Esve, so Abaya asks a further question to Rabba, which, by the way, the Rabach points out in his Trova that we mentioned yesterday, that evidently the Gemara here is not in chronological order necessarily. We said yesterday that there was, at one point in the discussion, we said that they had a certain question on the thing that lasted for the whole 22 years of Rabba's Rosh Hashivaship, and they didn't finally answer it until after Rabba passed away and Rabbi Yosef took over as Rosh Hashiva. But here we have Abaya asking Rabba a further question about it. So obviously, it's a continuation of the previous discussion, rather than focusing on that detail that Rabbi Yosef had answered.
That's the Rabach.
That's the Rabach says this. Yeah. So Esve, Reb Shimon Poiter. We said in the Braise that Reb Shimon says that he's Potter from the Asham Gzelus. because you don't pay a knas based on your own admission. Which means, therefore, so what does it mean? In other words, because if you had been Moida, you would be Potter. So what does that mean? It means that Reb Shimon is saying that even that Reb Shimon, now obviously that can only apply before Amar Badin. That can't apply after they already went to Beis Din, because after they went to Beis Din, you can't admit and be Potter from it. So, time of Deloy Amar Badin. Evidently, then, Reb Shimon is only talking about why are you Potter from the Asham Gzelus. Because you didn't go to Beis Din. Ha'omer b'din, but if it had already been paskin in Beis Din that he owes it, d'mishalem apiatzme, where then he does have to pay even if he himself admits it, because Beis Din already paskin, korban shavur nami mechayev, then he should be chayev the korban shavur as well. Why would Reb Shimon be saying that there's this distinction whether it started out as knas or not? What's the logic? The answer is Reb Shimon, l'divrei de rabbanim kamalahu. You're right, Reb Shimon is saying I'm not saying that particular detail according to my own opinion. I'm saying, I'm arguing according to you, the Chachamim. He's saying, L'didi, afagav de'omad b'din rachmana patre mivakichish. As far as I'm concerned, it's not a question of whether he can be moida or whether he's able to be moida and be potter or not. As far as I'm concerned, the fact that it started out as knas is enough to make him potter from the korban shvur, from the asham gzelis, because we said yesterday, the pasuk lists at the end of parashas Vayikra five things that you'd have to bring the asham gzelis for, and all of them are various types of mamon claims, where you actually owe, where you owe somebody for money that he lent you, or that you found and didn't return to him, or whatever. All of them are mamon, not knas. And since the pasuk says v'chichesh ba'misa and lists these five things, then the implication is it only applies to mamon. It doesn't apply to something that started out as knas. So even now when omad badin, when based in already paskin that he owes the money, that doesn't make it knas. That doesn't make it mamon for this purpose. That still makes it knas.
It's a good question. How can something deraisa be changed by the Beis Din?
What are you talking about?
Nobody's knas is what?
Knas is also something that's required midaraisa. Okay. The same Torah that tells us the Torah tells us there's two different kinds of payments that a person may have to make up in Torah, as we started talking about this the other day. There's mamon and there's knas. Uh-huh. Mamon is that, for example, I borrowed $100 from you, so I got to pay it back. I damaged you or your property or whatever to the tune of $100, so I owe you $100. That's mamon. Uh-huh. Knas is where the Torah finds you. The Torah is saying, effectively, under normal circumstances, you shouldn't have to be paying this. But the Torah is penalizing you and making you pay this. Where you're paying, where a ganav who pays kefil, the onus or mafatra who pays the fifty shkalim, etc. All those are examples of knas.
But the Torah doesn't say that. That mammon is going to be
by mentioning five things, by the Torah mentioning five things, but pikadon, besumas yod, begezel, oshak, etc. All of those are cases of mammon. All of those are cases where, under any legal system, right, you would have to pay them. Those are mammon. Those are not knas. Right. Therefore, Reb Shimon says we learn from that implication in the pasuk that there is a difference between mammon and knas. Right. Therefore, if you deny a case of mammon and swear falsely, then you'll have to pay. You have to give the asham gzelus. If you swear falsely on a matter of knas, then you don't. And Reb Shimon is saying, as far as I'm concerned, that applies whether we're talking about the original claim in Beis Din, that Reuven claims to Shimon, you owe me a knas, and Shimon denies it and swears falsely, or whether we're talking about that they went to Beis Din, there was no swearing or anything, Adam came, said that he's chayev, so therefore he's chayev. Now, later on, a month later, Reuven says to Shimon, nu, where's that money that Beis Din paskin that you owe me? And Shimon says, I don't know what you're talking about. I swear that I don't owe it to you. Mm-hmm. Either way, Reb Shimon says, because it started out as knas, then there's no asham gzelus. Right. Right. So he's saying, as far as I'm concerned, there's no difference. Because once the pasuk says v'chichesh, then and lists the five things, then it means only mamon, not knas in any case. Ela l'didchu, but according to you, chachamim, fine, you don't agree with that limud. At least you should agree with me before they went to Beis Din, to ki katava knasa katava, because the fact is, what are you claiming? You're claiming a knas. Even you should have to admit, fine, you want to make that distinction between whether it's originally knas, whether he's able to get out of it by admitting, versus after Beis Din paskin, where he's not. Fine, I can accept that you want to make that distinction. But at least when you're coming before the case ever went to Beis Din, why shouldn't you
accept my category?
Moide b'knas potter. And if you're moide b'knas, right, then you're potter. So why don't you agree then? Right. Why are you saying that even in that case? Why are you saying that even in that case you're going to say he's chayev the korban shavur?
Very, very logical.
Yeah, I don't know. I must have lost the last couple of minutes. All right, whatever. I'll get it from yours later. Okay. V'rabbanan sabri, where's the Rabbanan take the view? Ki katava boshes of gam katava. V'rabbanan say, you know what the difference is? We hold that when Reuven is coming to Shimon and Beis Din and telling him, which was what brought us into this whole case, he's saying, onastu pitisa es biti. Remember, we said before, there's actually several different kinds of payments that an onus or mafata has to pay. Besides the 50 sloyim, which is a knas, he also has to pay nezek and boshes, and in the case of an onus, also tsar, and those are not knas, those are mamon. So the Rabbanan are arguing that what he's claiming from Shimon is he's claiming things that are mamon. Whereas Reb Shimon is arguing, he's claiming things that are knas. Different Mefarshim take different views on it. Are the Chachamim saying he's only claiming the Boshes and Pagam and not the knas, or are they saying he's claiming everything? But the Rabbanan are saying, given that
basically
what. Well, so that's so one way of looking at it. If the Ritva takes the view, why, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, both the Reb Shimon and the Chachamim are agreeing, seem to be agreeing that a person may not try to claim everything that he's owed at once. The Ritva says, what's the logic? Because if you try to claim everything, you try to claim the Knas and the Boshes and the Pagam, the guy's going to think a second, you know what, that's going to add up to a huge amount of money. You know what, let me just deny the whole thing. I can't be bothered.
That's also a good point, yeah.
Mashenkin, you claim from him right now the Boshes and Pagam, let's say, he'll think to himself, okay, you know, that I can afford right now, fine, I'll admit to it. Later on, you'll come back with the claim of Knas, and then you'll be able to collect that as well. If we say then, according to the Rabbanan, that's what it means, he's only claiming the Boshes and Pagam, those are mamon. Of course, Asham Gzelus applies to a shvuras kfiras mamon when you're swearing falsely on a claim of mamon. Even Reb Shimon agrees to that. That's the basic case of Asham Gzelus. So therefore, they say that you're chayev. So the underlying machlokus is not really are you swearing on a case of knas or not. If it's before they came to Beis Din, then for sure there's knas and there's mamon. There's no knas that's been converted to mamon. The machlokus between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon, rather, is what is the guy more likely to be claiming at this point? When he says, "Onastu upitisa esbiti," you were ma'anes or you were mafata my daughter. What is he mainly after right now? Is he mainly after the 50 sloim, which is a knas, or is he mainly after the Boshes and Pagam, which is mamon?
He cannot be claiming both.
Well, so that's the thing. Like I say, in the Gemara in Shavuos, where this Gemara is also brought, has the Giris over there that according to Chacham, he's claiming both. He's claiming the Boshes and Pagam and the Knas all at once. But even so, since he's claiming Boshes and Pagam, which is Mamon, then therefore we go as far as the Korban Shavua, as far as the Asham Gzelus, we look at that primarily. Yes, there is Knas involved, but we set that aside.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point? What's the reason for the argument? Amar Papa, Reb Shimon suffered. Reb Shimon figures like this: if you're saying, and again, let's go with the Ritva's svara, that you're only going to be trying to collect one or the other because you know tafasta merubala tafasta, you try to claim everything from the guy, he's just going to deny the whole thing and you'll end up with nothing. Reb Shimon suffer, you're more likely to go after the knas. Leshavik inish midi dekits v'tava midi deloy kits. It's less logical that a person is going to ignore something which has a fixed value and try to go after something which doesn't have a fixed value. The knas is a fixed thing; it's 50 shkalim. You're claiming 50 shkalim. The Boshes and Pagam, we learned in the previous perek, based on us to start figuring out how much she's worth less because of the bia. How much was the tsar in the case of an anusa? It's an evaluation. So it's more logical that the guy is going to be, if the guy is saying onasto piti says biti, he's probably more logically going after the 50 slayim, which is an amount that he knows that he knows the actual amount that he's trying to claim. And then
unless what he claims in terms of mammon is much more than 50 slayim.
But we don't know, he doesn't know that it's going to be necessarily, depending on what Beis Din comes up with, it may be more or less. Yeah. The Rabbanan Savri, whereas the Rabbanan take the view, Lo Shavik Inish Midi to Kimodi Be Lo Mifter, V'tava Midi to Kimodi Be Mifter. The Rabbanan say, yes, but you can look at it the other way. If the guy were to deny the whole claim, if it was the Knas, if he were to admit to the claim, if he admits to the claim, what happens? He's potter from the knas, moedib knas potter, but he's still chayiv in the Boshes and Pagam and sire for an anosa. So the Rabbanan figure, instead, he's more logical to be suing the guy in Beis Din for the Boshes and Pagam, because that he knows for sure he has a much better chance of getting, because even if the guy says in Beis Din, you know what, yes, I did it. Okay, well then pay up.
As opposed to the knas,
where the guy may end up admitting, and then he doesn't get anything, then he wasted his time in Beis Din.
And that's where it comes.
So ultimately it comes out then that Reb Shimon and the Rabbanan are arguing on several different points. Mm. Number one, they're arguing on what exactly, when the guy sues the other one in Beis Din and says, "Onasto pitisa es biti," what is he mainly after? Is he mainly after the knas, or is he mainly after the Boshes and Pagam? Number two is also, do we say that there's a difference? Do we say that a knas that was adjudicated and based in and decided that it has to be paid, does it now become mamoin for all purposes, or does it still retain some of the dinim of knas? as far as we said, as far as the korban shavua, the asham gzeilus. And number three was the point that we said in our Mishnah: do we consider that the money belong, the money is considered the father's as of when based in paskins that it has to be paid, or only as of when it's actually paid?
Oh. 3 points.
Yeah. Now the Gemara goes on to a new topic, which is going to connect back to our Mishnah.
What's the halacha now? Before
the halacha is the halacha is like the chachamim. The halacha is like the chachamim
But he starts with the
that once. The halacha is like the chachamim. Period. I mean, right. In all these areas, yeah.
Right.
Okay, so now the Gemara goes on to kind of a new topic, which is going to connect back to our Mishnah. The end of our Mishnah had mentioned, since we were talking about in the Mishnah when the Knas and Vershis and Gam, etc., when they go to the brothers as part of the estate versus when they go to her, the Mishnah had finished off that Maisi Yodeha, that the things that she does, she spins, she weaves, she babysits, whatever, and earns money that way. Or mitziyasa, anything she finds. That we said that if the father dies, then those go to the brothers. So now we're going to talk about a related issue. As background to the next piece of Gemara, it's like this: when a person writes a ksuba to his wife, there's a number of tnayim that go along with the ksuba, a number of conditions that are takanas chachamim that go along with the ksuba. One is that they make a tnai: any girls that are born from this marriage are going to be entitled to support out of the estate until they're ready to get married. Which means, in other words, when a girl is growing up and her father is still alive, then he's supporting her. We'll talk about in the Gemara. Really, technically, he doesn't have the requirement in halacha to support her, at least not past a certain age. We'll talk about that much more later on in the perek. But practically speaking, usually he does. But after he dies, they're entitled, based on the Snai Ksuba, they're entitled to support. She's entitled to support until she gets married. So therefore, Bominei Rav Avinim Rav Sheshes, Bas HaNizonis Min HaAchin, Maisei Yodeha L'Mi. This daughter who's getting supported by the brothers out of the estate, who does her Maisei Yodeha belong to? Any money that she earns, who does it go to? Does she keep it, or do her brothers get it? Bimkoim Av Kaimi, do we say that the brothers stand in place of the father? Therefore, Mahasa Maisei Yodeha L'Av, therefore, just like if her father was alive, the Maisei Yodeha would go to him. Hachinami Maisei Yodeha L'Achin, so her brothers are taking over for him, therefore it goes to her. Oduma Loidomi L'Av, or maybe it's not like the father. Because the difference is that when she's being supported by her father, she's being supported by him, basically. It's voluntary, that the fact that he's supporting her. It's out of his own property. Here she's not really being supported by them, because really she's being supported by the estate. It was part of the tnai ksuba. It's an obligation on them, same like any other choiv that their father left over, which they have to pay off. It's not like they have an option in the matter. So therefore, maybe we should say they don't stand in his place.
But for the father's also, it's an exuber.
No, that's the thing. As long as the father is alive, it's not. The fact that he's supporting her, the fact that he's supporting his daughter, is sort of a voluntary thing. He owns possessions, and therefore he supports his children. Now, the Gemara is going to talk about later in the parak that technically a person is not really obligated to support his children after age 6. We bring social pressure on him if he doesn't. The Gemara talks about it, but yeah, because in those days it was considered that above that age they could already be earning some money.
What about age 30?
Things are obviously a lot different now. The Gemara mentions later on we'll have on Daf Mem Tes, Daf Nun, that if a person didn't want to support his children past that age, they would bring social pressure to bear on him, etc. But technically, Al Pi Halacha,
why isn't this guy gets married before he has his daughter, right? Why isn't it in the actual ksuba that he has to support his wife, his daughter, until they get married? Why does it happen only after he passes away? That's what I understand.
Because but it's not though. It's not tnoi ksuba take effect when the ksuba take. Well, some of the tnoi ksuba take effect while he's alive. Sure, I mean, so some of the tnoi ksuba that are daraisa, shei ksus, oina, etc. But some of them only take effect when the marriage is over, when he dies or divorces his wife. This is one of them. So maybe we should argue that that they don't get Homaisi Yodea, that they don't get the Homaisi Yodea. Amalei, sort of Shesha says Tinisua. Well, we have a Mishnah that talks about this later on in the Masechta, the beginning of the 11th Perek. Almana Nizonis Minichsi Yisaimim. Now there also it talks about another one of the Tnoi Ksuba is that the Almana herself is also entitled to support after out of the estate as long as she remains an Almana. And the Mishnah says there, Almana Nizonis Minichsi Yisaimim, that the Almana gets supported out of the estate of the Yisaimim, Umaisi Adair Shalahen, and Umaisi Adair, anything that any money that she earns goes to them. So we see that their mothers or stepmothers or whatever is Maisi Adea go to them. By the same logic, their sisters Maisi Adea do also. Question is Midomi, who says it's the same thing? You could argue that the father, the husband doesn't care so much if his almana has to be able to earn money. Whereas maybe he wants that his daughter should be able to earn her own money, so this way she'll have a nice amount for her nadin. She'll have a nice amount to bring into a new marriage, into her marriage when she gets married.
He wants her married.
He wants her married, and therefore he has more of an incentive to make that the tnai ksuba to begin with should be that she'll be entitled to a maisi adeha. She'll be entitled to parnosa anyway out of the estate to support and to a certain amount towards her wedding expenses, and now she'll have extra. Question is, so you're telling me then that the average person would prefer to benefit his daughter over his almana? We find differently. Also, almana etzel abas kabas etzel achin. The rule of the relationship of the almana to the daughter is the same as the daughter to the sons. Binachasin muatin. When the estate is small. Now, for this part, we need to know another piece of background. We know the Torah says a person dies, his sons inherit him. Mina Torah, the daughters don't get anything. Unless there's no sons, then b'nai slavcha, then the daughters get everything. The Rabbanan made a takana that the daughters each get a certain ksuba's benin dichrin is something else. That's the sons inherit the ksuba over and above their share in the estate. That's something else. We'll talk about that later. But we'll talk about that in another week and a half. Is ksuba's benin dichrin? No. Now what we're talking about is that there's a takana of parnasa that we say that the girls are entitled to a certain amount of the estate. In order that they can use that towards wedding expenses. Actually, Rashi over here says that the vote is that it's supposed to be parnosas shnei masa chodesh. It should be enough to support them for a year. And Tosfos talks about that not necessarily. It may be more until they get married. Whatever it is. Now, so if you have a large enough estate that the daughters can get that, then you set aside that amount for their parnosa, and the sons get the rest. What if the estate is not large enough for that? Then we say the daughters get their amount for parnasa. That's earmarked for them. If there's not enough for the son, if there's not enough left for the sons to inherit, then they'll just have to go earn their own keep. They may have to go begging if necessary. Yishalor al psachim. So the same rule that we make for a daughter with sons, that we earmark her parnasa, her share for herself, and the sons only get whatever's left.
Could be applied.
The same rule we do with an almana versus a daughter. Ma'abas etzalach, and just like when you have a daughter, and then you have brothers, habas nizonis, the daughter gets her maintenance, her share, not as Yerusha, really, but as upkeep until for 12 months or until she gets married, whatever. And the sons, the brothers, if there's nothing left, may have to go begging. Af almana etz al abas. The same thing goes when you have if there's an almana and a daughter. Same idea. The almana's rights to maintenance take precedence over the daughter's. Ha almana nizonis v'abas tishal psachim. The almana will get her part that's earmarked for her to live off of, and the daughters, if need be, will have to go begging. So we see therefore the almana is higher in the ranking than the daughter. She has the upper hand. Tosfos, by the way, says an interesting idea over here, which not all Rishonim agree with, that there's a difference actually whether we're talking about or is there an almana as well as sons as well as daughters, or is there an almana and daughters and there's no sons? Tosfos makes the distinction. This that we're saying over here, that the almana goes ahead of the daughters, is if there are sons, given that already we're having to take away from the sons to give to the daughters, then we can go further therefore and say that in that case the almana takes precedence over her. Whereas if there's only an almana and daughters, where then the daughters yaushin min atarda, not necessarily are we going to take it away from them and give to the almana.
That's the question.
Yeah, that Tosfos learns that way. There's a distinction between those two cases. Be that as it may, that doesn't really matter to our Gemara over here. That's just a side point. The point is that we see that there's a certain case where the almana's claims take precedence over the daughters, and you're saying the other way around. You're saying that when it comes to Maisia Deha, that a person wants that his daughter should be entitled to her own Maisia Deha, so she can save up towards her wedding and towards her Nadin. Whereas the almana not? And here we see the other way around. The answer is there's a difference. In zilusa, when it comes to being publicly embarrassed, almanasi adifala. He would rather that his almana should be able to live b'kavod dik over his daughters. He'd rather if there's a choice, if one of them is going to have to go around begging or raising money or whatever, he'd rather that it should be the daughters rather than the almana. Le'inyan havacha, but when it comes to actually earning money, bitei adifalei, then he would rather have that his daughters are preferably the ones to earn money for themselves, so that they have enough to save up for their nadin. But so you could still say then that So Rav Sheshes wanted to compare them. Rav Sheshes wanted to say, the same way as we say the Amonas Maisiyada go to the sons, so does the daughters. So far we see there seems to be a distinction, though. There seems to be a logical reason to distinguish between those. Masiv Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef asks a contradiction from our Mishnah. The end of our Mishnah said Maisiyadeo Mitziyasa, that whatever the daughter earns and whatever she finds, Alpha Pishle Govsa, even if she didn't collect the money yet. For example, she did work, she hasn't gotten paid for it yet, but she's owed that money. The Mishnah says Mesa Av Hare and Shalachin, that if the father dies, then they go to the brothers. Which time of debchaya ab? Now, why are we saying it goes to the brother, to the brothers? Because she earned this money while the father was alive. Hala acha misses ab la atzma. But if after the father died, it should go to her. Not like Rav Sheshes is saying. My lav v'nizonis. Now, lachora, isn't our Mishnah talking about the case where she's getting supported out of the estate? And then we would see that even though she's getting supported out of the estate, her maisiyah deah does not go to the brothers. It does not. They don't take the place of the father. It goes to her. Contradictory of Sheshes. The answer is like, not necessarily Bishain and Nizonis. No, you could say that our Mishnah is talking about where she's not getting supported out of the estate. So her father was supporting her while he was alive, and therefore he's entitled to Maisia Deo Mitziyasa himself. Later on in the Perek, the Gemara points out the logical reason for it is, given that he's not required to support her, like we were saying before, then we want to sort of give him an incentive to support her. We want a mishum eva, it's called, the Gemara says later. We don't want that there should be bad feelings between them, like, you know, you're freeloading off me, so to speak, you know, and I'm not getting anything out of the deal. So like this, he's entitled to a maisia dea. Actually, maisia dea, not really. Maisia dea, actually, we learn that he's entitled to, because we said the other day, kol shvachna urim, and we'll have later on in the pedic, kol shvachna urim le'aviyah. Any earnings that she receives while she's still a ktana or a naira belong to her father. We said before, actually, because when she's a ktana, her father even has the right to sell her as a maidservant, so therefore the Torah gives him rights over her earnings.
So it's a wash in a way.
No, so go to him minatoda.
Right.
Mitziasa, though, the Mishnah is saying, also goes to him. That's a matter of Mishum Eva. That's the kana of the Chachamim, that anything she finds belongs to her father Mishum Eva, because we don't want him to feel badly disposed towards her, like, you know, I'm supporting you, what am I getting in return, kind of.
So but we don't. Does it have to be in the same amount?
No.
She earns three times
the
what he.
No. So the mice. No, wait. Well, actually, the same amount we'll get to in a second. We'll get back to that in a second. Wait. But right now we're focusing on. So the point is like this: if if the father, either way, whether the father is supporting her or not, he's entitled to Maisi Yodea, as we're going to get to, as we're going to get to now. Mitziyasa is there Mishum Eva. If he's supporting her, then it's only fair that he should be entitled to Mitziyasa, to anything that she finds. But now, after the father died, B'shein and Izonis, let's say we're talking about a case she's not being supported out of the estate. Then the Mishnah is implying that then the Maisi Yodea and Mitziyasa go to her, not to her brothers. Question is, Ibishain and Izonis Maila Memra. Well, what's the Chiddush then? If he's not getting supported out of the estate anyway, why would we think the brothers get it? Even you have, when it comes to an Eved, there is an opinion, the Gemara has a machlokas about it in Gittin, does a master have the right to say to his Eved, you have to work for me, but I'm not obligated to support you, I'm not obligated to feed you. You can go and beg for money. And the halacha is the halacha is actually that he is allowed to, but it's a machlokas in Gittin. The halacha is that he is allowed to. The Rambam says because after all, Jews are, we're talking about an Eved Knani, as the Gemara is going to say now. Jews do have a mitzvah to support Avodim Knanim because an Eved Knani, as we learned in Yevamos, is like a quasi Jew. Therefore, you have a mitzvah of a chayach chayimach in that sense. So therefore, yes, the master can tell him that and expect that the people of the town will help him out. The other logic behind it that Amam says is because such a situation really isn't going to last very long anyway. If the master says to the Eved, "Asei mi vein izanach," realistically the slave is going to soon take off for greener pastures. So the master has an incentive not to do that.
Aren't we saying also Jews are Rachmanim?
Right, Jews are Rachmanim, but after all, the Eved is pretty soon going to get tired of having to do that, and he's going to take off for the territory. So the master has an incentive not to do that. Yeah. So even according to the opinion, though, that a master can do that, I'm entitled to everything that you earn, but I don't have to support you. That only applies to an Eved Knani. The Torah never says that an Eved Knani has to be treated on an equal level with you. But an Eved Ivri, the Pasuk says, imach, kitov lo imach, the famous thing, that the Eved Ivri has to be treated at least as well as you. You can't have the pillow and he doesn't. You can't have the good food and he doesn't, etc. Kolakona Eved Ivri, kona odlatzma, the famous thing. And so, and then you can't do that. Like, Hoshikin Bito, how much more so your daughter? You don't have, how can you say, I'm entitled to everything that you make, but I don't have an obligation to support you? Of course it doesn't work that way. So then, once she's not being supported out of the estate anyway, then of course the brothers don't have a right to anything she earns. Rabbi Ba'ula says, okay, fine, but the Mishnah could be talking about that there's a difference between there's the amount that she makes that's equal to the amount that's needed for her maintenance, for her to eat and so forth, and then there's more than that.
Right.
So the chiddush of the Mishnah would be, in other words, that ainu nizonus, she's not getting supported by the estate, but we would say that we would say. Yes, you know, of course you can't make her go beg. If she's earning money, she's entitled to that money. We would say maybe she's entitled to the amount that she needs for her to buy herself food and clothes and whatever, and everything else should go to the brothers. That might be the chiddush of the Mishnah, that not. So you can't necessarily prove anything from that about whether if there is no hadafa, if she's just making enough to support herself, whether it would go to the brothers or not. Amar Rava, Gavra Rabba Kirav Yosef. Now let's consider, I mean, we have a great person like Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was actually Rava's Rebbe. Lo yada de ikah hadafa. Didn't he realize that, don't you think he realized that there's such a thing as hadafa, that's possible for her to be earning more than is needed for her food and clothes? And yet he's asking the question, you must have misunderstood Rabbi Yosef's question. Obviously he's not asking that there's a difference between how much, there's a difference that in a case which he's earning X amount or X plus Y, that the Mishnah might be telling us about one versus the other. There's no, obviously Rabbi Yosef knew that there could be that. No, Rabbi Yosef's question is something different. Ela Amar Rava, Rabbi Yosef Masnisin Gufa Kashalei. Rabbi Yosef is asking, actually, based on the wording of the Mishnah itself, so what did the Mishnah say? That her Maisi Adea, whatever the girl earns, or Mitziyasa, and anything she finds, Alpha Pishalei Govsa, even though she didn't collect it yet. Now what do you mean she didn't collect? Mitziyasa, Meman Gavya, something that she found, there's nobody to collect from, she found something, and she found a wallet on the street, not a wallet, okay, there's a simon on it, whatever, she found $100 on the street, there's nobody to be goyved from, she picks it up, that's it. ela lav hachakama. Obviously, the Mishnah must be, by mentioning mitziyasa, must be trying to make a comparison, to make an equation. Maisi adair ki mitziyasa. That what she earns with her maisi adair, what she earns from what she does, is just like something that she finds. Ma mitziyasa b'chaya av la'av, just like anything she finds while the father is alive does go to the father, because of Ava, like we said before, because since he's supporting her, then it's only fair, he'll be upset if he's not entitled to something she finds. But after the father dies, there's no issue of Ava, so then she keeps it for herself. Evidently, the Mishnah itself is implying that Maisiya Deh, same thing. No difference whether it's the exact amount she needs or more than she needs, whatever. Either way, the Mishnah is implying that as long as the father is alive, it goes to the father. Mitzad, that he could have sold her as an Amar Ivriya. After he's dead, then it goes to her. So it doesn't go to the brothers. Shmamina, that proves it. That was Rabbi Yosef's point. That was Rabbi Yosef's point. That the Mishnah itself seems to be implying, not like Rav Sheshis, that it goes to her rather than to the brothers.
Because we say Masia Dea Umitziasa.
Umitziasa, right. And since Mitzia right. necessarily is not going to go to the brothers, there's no reason it should, then Masia Dea evidently must be the same thing. Hmm. Itmar Nami, they said also that Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Basan Izonis Menachin, Maisiya Deh La'atzma. That a daughter who's, so even though she's being supported by the brothers, meaning supported out of the estate, she's allowed to keep her Maisiya Deh. Amar of Kana, my timer, what's the reason? Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, V'isnachaltim oysam livnechem acharechem. The Pasuk says, about Avodim Knanim, you will bequeath them, you'll cause them to be inherited by your sons after you. From which we learn, Oysam levnechem, an Eved Knani goes from father to son. V'loy b'nei seichem levnechem, your daughters don't get inherited by your sons, meaning the rights to things of your daughters, such as her Maisi Adea, don't get inherited by your sons. Magid shein ademers, chus piter levnoi. Thus we learn from that a person can't bequeath something that a right that the Torah gave him, chus piter, means something that he's entitled to from his daughter, such as Maisi Adea, he's not able to transfer that to his children. Therefore it goes to her. Which actually, Mefoshim point out, that the Gemara kind of knew of that limud all along. The real question was, when they asked Rav Sheshis, the question was, maybe did the Chachamim make a takana differently? Just like the Chachamim made certain takanas over here about, for example, the Metzia, that it goes to the father instead of to her, Mishum Eva, maybe they would have also made a takana that the Maisiya Deh, which previously Minatora went to the father, maybe Midrabanan they should go to the brothers. And we're saying that not.
And that's why they asked Rav Sheshis.
And that's why they asked Rav Sheshis, and Rav Sheshis said yes, but Rav Yosef so far proved from our Mishnah that not. Maski for Rabba, so Rabba asks, who says that this limud is talking about all kinds of different things that the father might be able to get based from his daughter? So we're saying it includes Maisiya Deh, but who says? The aim of pitya basuk knosis vachabolas akasa medaber. Maybe the pasuk is only talking about somebody was mefata the daughter, or any other knas, or any chavala. Somebody injured the daughter. Maybe the pasuk is talking about those kinds of things that the father which the father is entitled to. That those don't go to the sons. Maybe Maisiya Deh is different. The chain toner of Chanina, and in fact, Rav Chanina learned to braise exactly like that. The pitya basuk knosis vachabolas akasa medaber. So maybe Maisiya Deh is in a different category. The Gemara asks back. The Gemara asks back, not really asking back as to shlug up, but just to clarify what Rabba said. What do you mean chavolos? Tzair de gufa ninu. Chavolos is something that involves tzair that she herself experienced on her own body.
Which is not the case here.
Which means, in other words, that we're saying the Torah makes the father entitled to various payments that are being given because of his daughter, such as the knas and such as and so forth. And we said before Boshis and Pagam, but tsar doesn't go to the father. The logic we said the other day was that the father, for example, is entitled to Boshis and Pagam because he's capable of making her experience Boshis and Pagam by marrying her off to somebody unsuitable. But he's not capable, he's not allowed, al pi halacha, to do something that's going to cause her to experience tzar. So the tzar ought to belong to her. So what do you mean chavolos?
Since the boshet, he can make her.
He'd be able to. He'd legally be able to make her experience boshus by marrying her off to a manuvel or mukashchin. We said the other day to somebody dirty or covered with boils or whatever. And similarly, so that would be boshus. That would be embarrassment that she's married to such a guy. And it would also be pagam that now she's a baola. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the right to do something that's going to cause her tsar. Because we said the other day he can marry her off, but we said that by mafutah or by a normal marital relationship, there's no tsar. There's not a justiciable tsar the first time. We said because it's too small a tsar to be worth anything. So what are you talking about over here? So you're saying that maybe the pasuk is only talking schus bitoy. Maybe it's only talking about knosis and chavolos, but chavolos includes tsar, and tsar
chavolos means
that somebody injured her. So the tsar, at least the tsar, at least goes to her. Which also Tosfos points out that we have to be talking about a case where it wasn't a major enough injury to cause any loss of work. Because if it was, since we say Maisia Deh goes to the father, then sure, the father would be entitled to the fact that she lost time off work. But obviously, we're not talking about a major injury like that. We're talking about a minor one. Mm. Rashi, by the way, quotes from the Gemara in Bava Kamma. So what does happen if you have a little girl or a little boy, for that matter, gets injured, and we're saying that there's a payment for tsar that has to go to the child, but you can't, you don't want the child, what's the child going to do with money? They're going to end up spending it on shtusim. They're going to end up going and spending it at the corner store on a truckload of nash. So Rashi quotes from Gemara in Bava Kamma that the father has to yasalem sgula. He has to invest it into a safe investment for the child. So it's still, yeah, like a trust kind of. So it still belongs to the child, but yeah, the father has to manage it until they're old enough to know what to do with it. Yeah. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, Shepotza b'faneha. Yes, but you know what you could be talking about over here? Suppose that somebody injured her in her face. Where now she has a scar on her face that makes her, if the father were to have sold her as an alma hevriya, which he's entitled to do as so long as she's a ketana, remember, she'd be worth less because of that. Therefore, that's something the father has now suffered a certain financial loss, and therefore that goes to him. The tsar, you're right, would go to her, but the loss of value would go to him. And that's what Rabbah meant when he mentioned chabalis.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so. There you have, so you have Rabbah's objection, and the Gemara kind of leaves that objection unresolved. Yes, you could maybe argue that Zchus Bitoy does not include Maisi Adea. Maybe it includes, maybe it only includes certain kinds of things, but not Maisi Adea. So therefore, we at least have a source, given that Rav Chanina said a Braisa that says exactly that. Then we have a source for what Rav Sheshes said before. We had Rav Yosef had schlugged up Rav Sheshes because he said our Mishnah implies Maisi Adea goes to her after the father dies. But here we have Rav Chanina's Braisa, which is good enough support for Rav Sheshes. That yes, there are certain kinds of payments that go to the father as long as he's alive, and after he's dead, they go to her because they don't get inherited by the sons. But Maisi Adea is not in that category. So the Gemara says, Amr of Zera, Amr of Masna, Amr Rav, the Amri law, or different version, Amr Rabbi Zera, Amr of Masna, Amr Rav. The difference is, Rashi says, Rav Zera and Rabbi Zera are the same person.
Same
person, Rashi says. We know the famous thing called Rav Mibava, called Rabbi Meretz Yisrael, that the Chachamim were called Rav when they were in Bava because they didn't have Smicha. When they went to Eretz Yisrael and got Smicha and got the official Smicha, Ishmi Piyish, then they were called Rabbi with an extra Yud. It's brought someplace or other from Kisvei HaRizal that the extra Yud represents the Eser Koiches that they gain from the Smicha, whatever. Rav Zera started out in Bavel, later he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he got Smicha. So the two versions over here are, did he say this while he was in Bavel, or did he say it after he came to Eretz Yisrael? Having said that, by the way, Tosfos, the Tosfos in Menachos, where the Gemara mentions something, according to Tosfos' Girsa, the Gemara mentions something over there that Rav Zera did, and then it says that Rabbi Zera disagrees with that, so Tosfos says evidently that means they're two different people, not like Rashi says over here. Historically, there were at least two Reb Zeras, but actually both of them started out in Bavel and moved to Eretz Yisrael, so both of them started out as Rav Zera and became Rabbi Zera, yeah. Zeiri
in Yerushalmi.
Rav Zera in the Bavli is Rav Zeira in the Yerushalmi. Zeiri, who we have occasionally in the Bavli, is somebody else. But yeah, Zera is short for Zeira, yeah. Anyway, So he says, Bas ani zonis mina achin maisi adeh la'atzma, that this daughter who's getting supported by the brothers out of the estate keeps her own maisi adeh, like Rabbi Yosef said. Dichtiv, because the same pasuk we just quoted, v'isnachalta moisil levnechem achareichem, oisim levnechem, you bequeath avodim knanim to your sons, v'lo b'neseichem levnechem, not your daughters to your sons. Magad, chain and immersed, chuspita levnoi. So that teaches us that you can't bequeath rights that you have over your daughter to your sons. So he said that. So Rav Zera had said that in the name of Rav Masna, who said in the name of Rav. Amalei Avimi bar Papi. So Avimi bar Papi points out to him, Shakud Amra. You should know it was actually Shakud who said this. Shakud Manu. Who's Shakud? Shmuel. Now, why was Shmuel called Shakud? Shakud means the one who's diligent. So Rashi says because Shmuel, the general rule throughout Shas is when it comes to financial matters, when it comes to dinim mamonis, the halacha is usually like Shmuel over Rav. So Shmuel is called Shakud in the sense Shoyked al Dvarav la'Emun Kiyochse. He was very careful to say things that are alpi halacha. Therefore he was nicknamed Shakud. The Aruch has a slightly different take on it, that Shakud means like heavy Shakud Lomot Torah. Shmuel was always very diligent to be in the Bis Medrash, to be learning. And therefore we call him over here Shakud. Anyway, what do you mean Shmuel said it? Rav Amra. We just said Rav said it. Emra, Af Shakud Amra. Okay, what Avimu Bar Papi is pointing out is that not only Rav said this, Shmuel also said it. Okay, who's the halacha like? The Chachamim of Nahadah say as follows. They say that the halacha is like Rav Sheshes. So not like Rav Yosef, and also not like what we just reported from Rav and Shmuel. Ravashi says the halacha is like Rav, and indeed, that is the halacha, so the Maisi Adair go to her, not to her brothers.
Rav has always precedence over Rav Sheshes in terms of halacha.
Usually we say that up until Abaya and Rava, we usually say that the halacha is like the earlier, is like the earlier authorities. But here Rav Sheshes has Rav Chanina's Braisa to base himself on, and Rav Chanina is also from the same generation as Rav, more or less. So it's not really based on that. Maybe it's based on the fact we say that the halacha is usually like Shmuel, and in Dini Mominus, and here we just said that Shmuel said the same thing. Maybe it's based on that. Mishnah says, "Hamaaris is further on this topic of what things of a girl are actually go to her. What payments to a girl actually go to her father? Hamaaris is bite v'geisha. If somebody was mekadesh his daughter to somebody else, and then that person divorced her before they ever did the nisuin, irsa v'nis armala. Then the father was maaris her again." Which he still has the right to do, because until Nisuin, and as long as she's a Naira, until Nisuin, he still has rights over her. Vinis Armala, and then she was widowed. Ksuba Asa Shaloi. Then in that case, the Ksuba belongs to the father.
Shaloi,
but belongs to the father. But he see of a Gersha, he see of an Isamala, but if he married her off and then she got divorced, or he married her off and then she got widowed, Ksubasa Shalah, then the Ksuba goes to her, because once he married her off, then the father has no more rights over her. And Rashi says, according to the Tanakhama here, what we do is we look at it like this. Yes, the first Ksuba for her first marriage was written when she was still under her father's Rishus. But by the time it comes to collection, it's after the Nisuin already. At that point, she's out of her father's Rishus. Therefore, it goes to her. And of course, the second Ksuba certainly goes to her. Rabbi Yehuda, no, Harishana Shalav. Rabbi Yehuda says the first Ksuba belongs to the father, for reasons that we'll talk about in the Gemara. Amrulai, the Chachamim told him, Im Mishisiya in Lavi Rishusba. Once a wedding has taken place, once Nisuin has happened, the father has no more rights over her. So no, he shouldn't have a right to the first Ksuba.
Makes sense.
Rashi, by the way, points out an important detail that we need to know in order to understand this Mishnah and the Gemara. Usually, now the way it works is like this. Usually, the chiyuv of ksuba only comes into effect at the nisuin. Not only that's when the ksuba is usually written, but usually the ksuba with all the tanoi ksuba and whatever really usually only goes into effect by the nisuin. But actually, that particular point, whether it goes into the effect from the Erusin or from the Nisuin, is actually a machlokus that we'll have extensively later on in the Masechta. Our Mishnah is going according to the opinion that it applies even to an Arusa.
Retroactively.
Not retroactively, right. So in other words, so you have basically, there's a verbal agreement of the Ksuba that takes effect as of the Erusin. Afterwards, later on, a Ksuba is written, and then you have a written Ksuba that takes effect as of the Nisuin. We'll see in the Gemara, there's a distinction between those two.
To where of the opinion that it goes even concerning Arusa, what the Ksuba of the Arusa referred are binding only by the Nisuin?
Yeah. Yeah. So, our Mishnah is implying that they take effect even as of the Erusin. But the halacha, as far as I know, is that they only take effect as of the Nisuin.
Where do you see that in our Mishnah?
Because otherwise, what do you mean ksubasa shaloi? In the first case, where she was nisaris and then divorced, what ksubasa shaloi? What ksuba? That's why it has to be that we're talking about that she's entitled to a ksuba payment. So the Gemara starts by pointing out, Taima dehisi of a ger shehisi of a nisamala. Now you notice the Mishnah mentions that the father married her off and then she got divorced, and then she married off again and then she was widowed. Which, by the way, Mefarshim point out, Chassam Sofer, for example, points out that really Hisia the second time is not really correct. Once she's been married the first time, the father doesn't have any more rights to marry her off. Hisia really means that she herself she married herself off, whatever. Since we said Hisia the first time, then means Hisia the second time. But anyway, Avon this Amla Tre Zimni, but the Mishnah does not describe the case where she was widowed twice. And the reason is Tule Chazula in Suvi, because then she's not able to get married anymore. We learned in Yevamos about
she's
the concept.
Widowed twice.
She's widowed twice. So we learned in Yevamos about the concept of a katlonis.
Mm-hmm.
That we learned there was a machloikus, whether two or three times. There was a machloikus Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel. You have a woman whose husband, who a certain number of her husbands has died, is considered a katlonis. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous to be married to her, basically, and therefore she shouldn't get married again.
Mm-hmm.
We had a machloikus there, Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel. How many times does this have to happen before the chazaka is established? Rebbe said twice, Reb Shimon Gamliel said three times. For purposes of katlonis, since we want to be careful with human life, we don't want we don't want one more person to have to risk his life, then we say two times. Our Mishnah is incidentally telling us that detail. The agav uche, what?
Just because he overlives the husband, that means she.
So first of all, okay, so there is Tosfos talks, first of all. The Gemara there in that sugya of Katlonis discusses two different possibilities. Why b'chal? What's the mechanism, how we would say Katlonis works anyway? One possibility is mazel godim, that's poshut her mazel to have husbands that are going to die young, and I think the Noda Behuder, I think it is, talks about the idea that maybe since usually a woman is supported by her husband, maybe the idea is her mazel is that she's going to be poor, that she's not going to have anybody to support her. Or the other way of looking at it is mayim godim, that it's actually having relations with her that's dangerous. She has maybe some kind of disease or something that kills her husbands. One other thing is Mefarshim say, and the Ramal brings it in Shulchan Aruch, that this is we're talking about if the husbands died naturally, of natural causes. If they, you know, if let's say for example one of the, you know, if he fell off a ladder or something, you know, or got killed in a car accident or something, we're not talking about that. Yeah. Tosfos points out over here that the first part of our Mishnah, which talk, now one difference is between the reason of Mazel and the reason of Mayan would be, does it apply to Erusin or does it only apply to Nisuin? If it's a matter of Mazel, it would apply equally to both. If it's a matter of Mayan, obviously it only applies after the Nisuin. The first part of our Mishnah that talks about Erusin didn't mention Almana is fine. Tosfos says you can't necessarily prove one way or the other from that, because fine, it mentions the case of Grusha and then Nisarmala to be parallel with the second part. The fact that the second part with Nisuin makes a point of mentioning that there was divorce and then widowhood rather than twice being widowed is for the reason that the Gemara is saying over here to point out v'agav urche kasasim l'tana k'rebi. So by the way, the Tana is telling us a stam Mishnah like Rebbe, doma b'trei zimni have a chazaka, who says that twice is enough to make the chazaka of a katlanis. So in other words, Tosfos says the second half of the Mishnah shows us the reason of Mayan. The first half of the Mishnah, you can't necessarily prove from it that the reason of Mazel applies, because you could argue the first half is only meant to be parallel to the second half.
You know, if it's only engaged, doesn't really actually get married. Right?
That's the thing. According to the reason of Mazel, it would apply equally in both cases.
Oh.
According to the reason of Mayan, it would only apply in the second half of the Mishnah. But we could say that the first half of the Mishnah is mentioning Gerushin and Almana to be parallel with the second half. With Nisuin, everybody would agree that the din of Katlonis applies there. One more thing, by the way, is Mefarshim do talk about the question, this same din of katlanis, does it apply also if a woman's been divorced twice? Does it obviously not katlanis, her husbands aren't dead, but is it the same kind of thing that maybe it's not a good idea to get married to her?
Married.
Yeah.
How would you call that?
Wouldn't be called a katlanis, but okay, it would be, I don't know what it would be called.
Almost.
Yeah.
Hmm? Almost.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is therefore the Mishnah is changing and mentioning first Gerushin and then Almana in order to point out that if it were two times Almana, or according to some of the Mepharshim, two times Grusha, then yes, she'd be considered a Kaplanus and she couldn't get remarried anyway. Mm-hmm. So to avoid having to talk about a Peronus like that, the Mishnah therefore varies it and says one and then the other. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. You send me tonight's recording because it seems that mine is incomplete.